it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Warning. The following program may not be suitable for children.
Hold on to your butts.
As the sun sets over Slabtown, in the shadows of the Fremont Bridge, a club comes to life where you can let your freak flag fly.
There's a new fiesta in the making as we speak. Full kegs. Everybody's gonna be there. You ought to go.
The only thing that's off limits are the words you can't say thanks to the FCC.
They don't know what the f*** they're doing. Do you understand that?
We've given away too much to arrive at these political compromises. Yeah, now.
Google me, bitch.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Well, my.
Bye, bitch. Lace them up, you little bitch. Let's go.
I'm gay.
Okay, we apologize.
It's time for the club, baby, on 105.1 and 1080, The Fan. Hoo-wee.
It's club time here on The Fan. Buck Souk Schultze here with you for one more hour. The 49ers still have the Rams in twisted up into a pretzel, 14-0 in favor of the Niners. Rams deep in their own territory.
Which is more impressive, the fact that McCorkle has 14 points or the fact that the Niners defense has held the Rams to basically nothing.
Yeah. Which is more impressive? I'll say the defensive part, because we've seen this before. We mentioned it before with the Mullins and the Bethards of the world. Like, Shanahan has figured it out with lesser quarterbacks, but when you start losing dudes on defense and you're playing a team like the Rams and you're still making it work, pretty good.
I'm just convinced the Niners have some sort of weird, like, there's like a witch doctor somewhere where it just, there's like a curse, but then every time you're cursed, then Shanahan makes some sort of deal with the devil.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, there's weird juju.
That I wonder if the Seattle Etsy witch is involved in all of this.
Something is involved. Like, something stinks down in San Francisco. They just have weird, there's just weird juju down there.
Well, let's get to some club topics. There's one we left on the board yesterday that I am curious about. You say my racing career may have come to an end. I say nay. We'll see. Only the future will tell us that.
I'd just like to point out, there was a lot of big talk out of you that you insisted that you were going to run another triathlon.
Well, you don't do them like all the time. I'll probably do another one in a couple months. The other thing, too.
A couple months? You're going to do one in January?
Well, that was the thing.
You're getting into the water in January, are
no,
you?
No. I will tell you that my wife had me look up triathlons in warmer locations like the Bay Area, LA, San Diego, Arizona.
Yeah, because the Bay Area is super warm in this time of year, too.
Hey.
Dude, yeah. You ain't running again. You said it best. When you got done with that, you said that you had looked into running another one, and what did your wife tell you?
Do you really have time for that right now?
Yeah, and guess what's that code for?
Don't do it.
You're not doing it.
Dude, then she encouraged me to find another one later.
Have you bought a bike yet?
No.
No. So let's see.
I still have the bike that I rode.
You didn't buy a bike. The place where you swum
is closed.
That's closed. And on average, don't lie to me, over the last month, how many times a week are you running?
One time per week.
I ask you, fine people of Portland, does this sound like a man that is on the verge of running
a second
sprint triathlon? Drop at it right. You're a one and doneer. You're not doing it.
I've also told myself that if I do just one more at any point, that I can consider myself a triathlete because I've done it more than once, not just a guy who's run a triathlon. So there will be one more. When? Who knows?
Yeah, because if it doesn't happen next year, it'll never happen. Because then at that point, you're going to drop this one. Well, I mean,
I actually think there's a good chance.
I haven't done it in a while.
I may go back and do the same one that I did again in Bend. make it a Father's Day weekend tradition or something like that.
You're leaving us, and so as usual, we will never talk to you again. But I'm going I'm going to text you on Father's Day and be like, "Your fat ass better be down in Bend right now."
Put it in your calendar notes right now. You get an alert on June 12th.
Yeah.
And my guess is you're going to get I'm going to get a report of you like at a baseball game with a hot dog and be like, "Sorry, it didn't happen." There's no way you're running another one of those.
Okay, well then tell me about the Carolina Reaper Mile, because maybe that's something. If it's only a mile, it's considerably less than the 5K part of the triathlon.
I love anything where you have to do something painful while running. Mm-hmm. Like the beer mile has always been my favorite one.
Yep.
Yes.
Like where you have to, you run a lap, chug a beer, run a lap, chug a beer. Well, I guess there's some dude on YouTube, and his whole deal is he does these, there was one where you have to run a marathon while smoking a pack of cigarettes.
Oh, God.
Which also I love.
There's an Asian man who was doing this. He was Japanese or Chinese. I saw a dude doing this. Like, he chain smoked the entire marathon. I don't even know how it's possible.
So, how many, a standard pack of cigarettes has 20 cigarettes. So, yeah, you essentially, it's not quite, but you're basically burning
a mile.
A cigarette a mile, which I just think is phenomenal.
And if you've ever, if you've ever just sucked down a dart outside of a bar or whatever, one or two is one thing. A pack of 20 in that span of time does not seem good.
Well, just try running a block and smoking a cigarette. Yeah. Nevertheless, a mile or multiple miles.
I'm actually impressed by that.
Dude, we're living in cowardly times because back in the day, my favorite sports photo of all time is, I think it's Len Dawson, who was the Chiefs quarterback in the first Super Bowl. At halftime.
That famous photo, black and white.
Ripping a heater, and he's got a Fresca.
Yeah.
He's got a glass bottle Fresca at his feet. And I'm like, that's when men were men.
That's right.
You may not like it. That's peak.
The portrait of American athleticism.
Dude, I love that. I remember when I first started working here, Vladi Divac was still playing.
Yep.
And when I actually went down and covered Blazer games, and I remember Vladi at halftime standing out in the hallway. Smoking in the tunnel. I'm like, freaking yes.
Yep.
Just out there got to get one of these down real quick. Put it out on the concrete floor and then jogged out onto the floor.
I guess
Mario Lemieux did this.
Yep.
He would smoke in between periods of hockey games.
Unbelievable. Ah, I got cancer. Wonder how that happened.
Yeah, the guy's you know what, though? Dude, that is one of the five greatest hockey players of all time.
Agreed.
So don't tell me smoking's bad for you when Lemieux is out there doing it.
Well, you always end up seeing, too, what do they call them, centenarians or whatever? Yeah. These people who live to be 104, and you talk to Madge from Nebraska, and what's her secret to longevity? That she has a couple Coors Lights and half a pack a day. And you're like, what?
Makes me so
happy.
Keeps
the blood pressure down, baby. Keeps you chill.
I guess there's some dude in North Carolina, and he did, they call this, it's the Reaper Mile. And you run a lap, and you have to eat an entire, it's the Carolina Reaper is the second hottest one.
Right.
So I guess the,
it was a ghost pepper,
the ghost pepper. It. But they said your average jalapeno is 8,000 on the Scoville meter.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And the California Reaper is 1.6 million.
God.
So I'll just give you an idea of what that's like.
So that's eight times what a jalapeno is or something like that.
Well, 8,000 to 1.
Oh, sorry, I think you said 800,000. Yes, no. Yeah, okay.
8,000? Yes, you get into some of that rot math?
Yeah, probably.
So for every lap, you have to eat a Carolina Reaper, and you're not allowed to drink anything until you complete the lap.
Oh.
You will die.
And no one has finished it.
You will die.
But they showed people the clip. I guess the guy did it on Instagram.
Okay.
And no one's done it.
Jeez, and I bet not.
And they get done, and after the first lap, guys are crying,
vomiting,
nose running down. And I thought to myself, that has to be, of all the mile challenges, that has to be the worst. And this is the thing, I thought of Mr. Beast. If I had the Mr. Beast money, I would do things like this.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great to see if someone for $1 million, would you even attempt?
Yeah.
Would you attempt it?
Oh, for $1 million, absolutely.
And
I'd
if you
attempt
get,
it.
And if you get nothing, if you don't succeed,
you get nothing.
You get nothing.
It's worth my shot. I would try. I would probably fail, but I would try.
And so of all the weird miles that I've seen, I thought that one seemed the most, is that even finishable? People weren't even finishing, people couldn't even do two laps. Like, guys were struggling on, like, they'd get done with the first.
Because doing four laps isn't the hard part. It's that those peppers absolutely wreck you physically.
You're not supposed to eat one.
No.
Under any circumstances. Yeah,
you might be able to have a tiny bit of, like, sauce from an extract of a seed, but you're not supposed to consume those whole.
No, you'll end up in the hospital more likely than not.
Yeah, well, guys were getting done with one, and you're not allowed to drink anything. You have to, like, once you're, well, with every lap.
Yeah.
So when you finish a lap, you can drink milk. You can.
Yeah.
You
but
can
then do, you got to do another one.
Then you got to do another one. Yes, and it's just like, just watching people just, this dude attempt it, you know, I guess with a group of idiot friends, I guess this is their deal. They go around and they do different, like, kind of random challenges and whatever. And I just was like, and by the way, they're not doing it for anything. And it made me think of it because I guess Jackass appeared, like Jackass made its debut 25 years ago.
Yesterday. It's the type of thing they would have done.
And that's I think that's why this was making the rounds. They were like, did Jackass that premiered 25 years ago yesterday, like, it led to all of these things because those guys weren't doing it for money. They were just doing it for content. So this dumbass that goes out and does this stuff.
Yeah.
He's just doing it to do
just,
it.
Just to get people to watch it.
Just to get people to watch
Very
it.
Very Barstool.
Yeah.
They've had some of these challenges. Remember, they had that dude, Jersey Jerry, who couldn't leave the offices till he had a hole in one on the golf simulator and he had to spend like 23 hours there and, like, you know, 14,000 swings or whatever.
Yeah, I just found someone that was compiling a list of people in honor of Jackass. This guy was one of them that runs these, you know, they do these different miles and he had all these different ones. That was by far the worst one. And it's the one that no one's finished. And I don't know if anyone could finish. I don't know if it's physically possible. There's that other dude that stings himself with the most, like.
We talked about him recently.
Yeah, it's like there's some sort of, like, whatever they call it. It's like a pain index.
Yeah.
So he just goes around the world and stings himself with the most painful stings.
Well, yeah. And then there's the guy who was also, like, building up his, like, anti-venom or whatever. And he was, like, intentionally getting himself bit by poisonous snakes.
Yeah. But there's this one dude that goes around on YouTube and, like, he takes bullet ants and, like, stonefish and whatever. He just goes around and finds the most painful things. I guess there is an actual pain meter.
Sure.
About things that sting and bite you.
Yeah.
And he goes around and finds them and then he stings himself on YouTube. And then he's
miserable.
Like, and then he talks about what each one does. And they were like, if that isn't directly linked to the Jackass folks.
It is. Those guys were the pioneers of that.
Yes.
Yeah. And then it makes you, like. And then I'm like, well, how much?
There has to be a better way to make money.
Well, and also, unless it's a crap ton of money, I mean, like, I don't know what those subscriptions and ad dollars look like. Well, I mean, I would think it must be worth it if you're still doing it.
Well, they
but
were,
like,
this article that I was reading yesterday was talking about the history of Jackass that I guess came from a thing called Camp Kill Yourself.
Okay.
And that was like Bam Margera was involved in that. And then Johnny Knoxville and Bam and like Chris Pontius, those guys all ended up kind of forming together. So it was like two kind of separate entities that were coming together. It kind of started as like a bunch of skateboarders. And then Johnny Knoxville was just a dude that was like, I can endure pain. But they were, do you know like what Johnny Knoxville's life is like?
I'm not sure I do, no.
He can't pee. He has to use a catheter.
Jeez. He's wrecked himself.
Multiple times a day, he has to insert a catheter because his urethra doesn't work.
Jesus.
He's got like permanent brain damage. He's got cognitive problems. I mean, like they went through the laundry list of he's got vision problems. Ooh. Like the dude is.
He wrecked himself
for
the show and the legacy. Yeah.
Yes. And so they were saying that, yes, Johnny Knoxville is worth, you know, a bunch of money. But, dude, Johnny Knoxville is really, really, really.
He's going to be one of the, like, one
in
of those,
bad shape.
He's going to be like one of those NFL dudes who dies in his 50s or 60s just because he was so hard on his body.
I mean, he's almost 60 already.
Is that right?
You know, he's in his late 50s now. I mean, if he said, hey, Jordan, if you would take $10 million in your bank account today, but you had to insert freaking catheters into your pee-pee every day, like multiple times, I'd say nay.
That's rough.
Yeah, and he's got like multiple herniated discs, so he has a hard time walking.
Mm-hmm.
He's got like one of the something with his eye. He's got like his eye's all messed up, so he can't see very,
like,
well out of one eye.
Or something from his cornea or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, and he had a motorcycle stunt where he did the torn urethra. The handlebars of the motorcycle went up into his crotch.
I remember that one.
And so he has to use catheters.
Ow.
Like in his body, and they're hoping one day that he doesn't have to, but he's like, that's how he has to go to the bathroom. All for the, you know, all for a little bit of fame and, you know, a couple million bucks.
All right, well,
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Isaac and Big Zook have you from here.
By the way, I found that the dude, the inset guy, it's the Schmidt Pain Index.
Uh-huh.
It was developed by a Dr. Justin O. Schmidt. And it just ranks him 1 through 4 based on, and he's been stung by like basically any insect you could have. So like a fire ant or a bee is 1. And then the bullet ant is the number 1. That's okay. 3,000 on the Schmidt index. And 1, like 1 would be a fire ant sting is described as sudden, sharp, mildly alarming, like a shock.
Okay.
2, feels like a flaming match on the head of an arm.
Okay.
And that would be like a honeybee or a wasp. Number 3, a harvest ant sting is described as excruciating, feeling like a tendon or muscles are being ripped out, which is kind of fun. And it tells you how
long. Which is kind of fun.
Yeah, and it tells you how long it goes on for, like how many minutes.
Yeah, like how long the sensation lasts.
Yeah, how long the sensation. So like that one they talked about, that goes on for anywhere from 30 minutes to 45 minutes. And then the bullet ant, which is number 1, that goes on for over 300 minutes.
Oh.
And he described that as...
It's 5 hours.
Pure, intense, and brilliant pain. He said, think of walking over hot coals. This is his description. He's had these. He's been stung by all of these. Walking over hot coals with bare feet while a 3-inch nail is in your foot.
Oh, and then that pain lasts for 5 hours.
Over and over and over again.
For 300 minutes. That apparently is the bullet ant, which is number 1 on the Schmidt Pain Index, if you're wondering what it's like to get bit by a bullet ant. And there are tribes, I've seen this like on National Geographic, there's tribes like in the Amazon where to become a man, they make mitts out of like leaves, like you know, just it looks like just two big gloves that you put on, and then they fill them with bullet ants.
Oh,
and then you have
I almost just swore.
And then have to put your hands inside.
No.
You have to put your hands inside the leaf mitts.
Why does that make you a man?
For whatever period of time, and then that's what makes you a
man.
Look up like bullet ant like tribal ritual or whatever, and you'll see it. It's like when you're 15 or whatever. Whenever you're crossing into manhood, like they don't allow you to like be with a lady until you've done.
Damn.
Now you've done the bullet ants. Which, by the way, that's not a bad idea.
Can't avoid it.
Like, if you want to avoid teenage sex, there you go. You're a parent. Like, all right. You want to have a little girlfriend, you have a little boyfriend, cool. Here's the bullet ant mitts. We'll find out how horny your teenager is when you pull out the old bullet ant mitts. And be like, all right, man. Mm. You get through this, you can have your girlfriend sleep over.
Well, let's do this. Let's get back on the clock, and then when we come back, a slightly less painful, though differently painful type of race, the Taco Bell Ultra Marathon. That's coming up in the club on The Fan, but first, Schultzy.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it's ultra marathon time. That is something I am confidently able to tell you I will never do.
That's like the David Goggins crap, right? Where they run like 100 miles or some crap.
It depends on the race. I don't know that there's an official distance, but an ultra is always further than an actual marathon. And so, they have ones that are like 100K, which I think end up being, you know, like 60 miles or whatever. And There's some famous ones around the country and around the world, but
yeah, it says here that the kind of the standard is there's 50 miles, 62 miles, which is the 100K.
Uh-huh.
So they do a 50K, 31 miles,
yep.
And then there's a 100K, which is 62 miles. So yeah, there's varying distance, anywhere from, sounds like, 30 to 50 to 100 miles.
Yeah. So this event was actually inspired by dudes who were planning to just run a regular ultra marathon. They were training for it in 2016. And when you're and this was for a 50-mile ultra marathon, not a 50K one.
And they don't stop, right? Like, you just you,
well, so I mean,
like a break.
You do sometimes have to stop to like fuel or go to the bathroom. It's like 50 miles, you're going to have to drop a number 2 at some point, probably, depending on how you fueled up for the race or whatever. So the way this actually started was with a couple bros out in the Denver area who were just training for their own 50-mile race. And one of the buddies had to use a bathroom, and so they stopped at a local Taco Bell. While the buddy was in the bathroom, one of the friends just like ordered an item, and he's like, I'm going to keep running. And they usually stopped at different farmers markets or places on the way where they could get healthier snacks or beverages.
I do that when I ride my bike more than like 20 miles on a weekend. I usually stop for a pastry and a beer at like a farmer's market. It's not quite the same as running 100 miles, but, you know, it's my version of it.
So they started joking about how funny it would be is if they created an ultra marathon based on fueling up at Taco Bell's along the way. And they talked about it for about 2 years, and then one of the buddies finally said, like, we got to stop talking about it and just actually do it. So they created this race that is a 50K ultra marathon. You go 31 miles, and the rules are you have to stop at 9 of 10 different Taco Bells on the route on your ultra marathon. You have to consume either a chalupa or a, or a cheesy gordita crunch by stop number 4, or by Taco Bell number 4.
Okay.
And then by stop number 8, you have to either finish a Burrito Supreme or a Nachos Bel Grande. And then, as are the cases in some of these ultra marathons, they often have like little totems or artifacts or things you're supposed to pick up along the way to like prove that you've done it.
Yeah.
So your wrappers and your receipts from the Taco Bells are your little totems along the way. And you have to have one item from 9 of the 10 Taco Bells, and it can't just be a beverage. It's got to be like a food item.
That's fantastic.
So that's the rule. You have to complete the race in 11 hours to run the 31 miles. And at first, it was just a handful of people that showed up because it was their own stupid local thing. And then one of their buddies got more serious about posting stuff on social media in 2022. Now they're up to this year. They have 1,200 people registered for this race. They're coming from 40 different states across the country.
Oh my God. They've got
people training for the Taco Bell Ultra Marathons. There's a gal in this article. She lives in New York, and she basically runs around Manhattan stopping at Taco Bells to train her body for these processed Mexican foods that it's going to have to digest during her ultra.
Do you just stop and do you have to like crap yourself like once or twice throughout this thing?
I'm guessing you're probably using the facilities at some of these stops, so you would have to.
So you just eat and then just wait to crap your pants?
Or you're just like,
running?
I know I've got the, I mean, maybe you know you've got a certain amount of time and you're like, I'll just do it at the next one. I don't know exactly what all the strategy is. The organizers did say there's a much higher dropout rate mid-race than most ultra races because people just can't handle what happens inside of them. The event website itself, which is quick to point out, they're not actually affiliated with Taco Bell. They just really like Taco Bell. Taco Bell doesn't want anything to do with this. They have basically said, yeah, this is only an event for people who want to do something fun and stupid, and there you have it.
See, I would this is the sort of thing that I would do, but it wouldn't be 31 miles,
like, right? Maybe a 31-mile bike ride.
Yeah, if you had a 31-mile bike ride and I had to stop and eat 9 Taco Bell, like that, you could get me to do that. That's some fun or whimsier if I had to drink, like, you know, again, can I, like, stop at, like, 9 places to get a beer? Like, you'd get me to do that. But the 31 miles, no. By the way, if you want to see something truly terrifying, look up ultra marathon feet.
Oh, that's got to be ugly.
No, thanks.
I can't imagine.
Seriously, just do a quick Google image search of ultra marathon feet and kind of scroll down. And I'm guessing 31 miles is probably different than the 50 or the 62 or the 100. But, dude, some of these photos of your feet after running 50, 60, or 100 miles.
No.
Oh, my God.
No.
That is like some of the skin. That is some of the scariest stuff I've ever seen in my entire life. This dude's feet after 100 miles.
Don't turn it around.
Let me see that again. I don't know that I want to see, but I didn't catch that. Let me see that again.
Show me this gross thing. Nope.
It looks like he's got, you know, like in the like zombie movies.
Well, it looks like,
it looks like
the risk of sounding like callous, like it looks like people who don't have shoes living in third world countries. Like it looks like they've just destroyed their feet over decades.
And I'm not certain that's the worst one. Some of the ones where the skin has just is just gone.
Some people are eating soup. Damn.
Some of the blisters that people have, like, they're not blisters. They just don't have any skin left on their feet. Oh, it's just gone.
Looks like a burned foot.
Yeah, it looks like a burned foot. I mean, it's nightmare fuel. How do you, the human condition to want to do, and I get the idea of wanting to do hard things. I think, like, doing hard things is one of the things that makes us human.
Yeah.
Like, there's a challenge to it. There's a sense of fulfillment, all that stuff. But the idea of doing things like this,
that's your body telling you that's too much.
Yes.
Right? I mean, like, and you see that with some of, like, the Ironmans and stuff like that. Yeah. Like the very elite people can and should do that, but the, you know, like, whether it's climbing Everest, I mean, like, there's not enough oxygen in your body or in the world to make that a comfortable experience, and people force themselves to do it anyway.
That is meant to kill you.
Yes.
Like, the human body cannot handle that. And yet there's people out there, like normal people, that are like, nope, this is how I'm going to push. And that fascinates me that we are wired into that. It was like one of these like deep philosopher types that probably has done too many mushrooms or weed, but it was actually a really good speech he gave. It's like a 7-minute clip and it struck a nerve. I saw this years ago. He basically said that throughout human history, right? Because we all believe in, you know, well, I guess we all don't believe, but most of us believe in evolution,
sure,
right? And that we came, you know, wherever you believe that we came from, and then we evolved, right? From, you know, whether you believe it's apes or pre-man or whatever, right? That whether we've been around for, you know, a million years, we've been around for 500,000 years, we've been around for 200,000 years, or even 3,000 years, whatever you believe human life started. We had one mission every day when we woke up. Well, actually, it was one mission, and that mission was survival. And he said, in order to do that, every day you woke up, you had to find something to eat,
mm-hmm.
you had to find something to drink, you had to find some place to sleep.
You had to defend yourself against the elements.
And make sure that nothing killed you.
Yeah.
And he said that was a battle
mm-hmm.
every day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, none of those things were easy. And that was the sole purpose we had. And that was the same purpose for hundreds of thousands of years. That's all we were genetically designed to do. Even through, you know, even through modern human times, if you lived in old England, you woke up every day and all of those things were still very real. And he said it's only really been in the last 100-150 years that through the vast majority of people, when you wake up, you don't have to worry about something killing you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about making sure that you have a place to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And food and water are...
they're just available and abundant.
They're available.
Yeah.
Yes, there's people in third world countries, but even people in third world countries, it's, you know...
It's easier now than it was.
Yes. And his point was, no one used to do any of this dumb crap. And like, there wasn't all this like kind of depression and meaningless stuff because you had a purpose. And his whole thing is, now that you wake up and you don't have that anymore, we are a genetic creature that no longer has a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and a daily challenge.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so people create new challenges. And those that do create those challenges are the ones that tend to do great things or tend to be very successful. And the ones that don't, that wake up and just kind of lead a whatever.
Just kind of humbly go about your business or whatever. Yeah.
And so he kind of went down the road. One of the things he was talking about was stuff like this. People find new ways to mm-hmm. punish themselves or challenge themselves. And some of these things, like, you are risking your life. Climbing Mount Everest is something that will and can kill you.
It has killed many.
Running 100 miles, what is there's one through like Death Valley.
Yep.
Where people die.
Yeah, it goes like through the Mojave Desert. It's like 120 degrees and like people do it on purpose. Like why?
And it was just an interesting, you know, and the dude's kind of a hippy dippy kind of guy, but it was interesting to hear him talk. And a lot of what he said, I was like, yeah, I can see that. Because he said, if you take a Australian shepherd,
mm-hmm.
it hurts. You don't have to teach it. That dog will herd children. It'll herd anything. Said, why? You don't teach that dog to do it. It's hardwired in its DNA. Why does a turtle know to run to the ocean
mm-hmm.
the moment it's born?
Yep.
It knows if it stays on the land, it's dead. It has to go that way.
Yeah, how does a baby bird know that it actually has to jump out of the nest up in the tree to figure it out?
Yeah.
Like, it just does.
And that's his whole thing, is like, we are meant to have those challenges. And if you take those away, you end up with a lot of miserable, depressed people that don't know what to do every day when they wake up and they're like, well, I have a roof, I have food, what the hell am I doing?
You gotta create something for yourself to keep going, or at least some people do.
Yeah.
So if the Taco Bell Ultramarathon on its own isn't challenging enough for you, there are different versions of it that Taco Bell Ultramarathoners have tried, including the Diablo Challenge, which requires participants to put on Taco Bell's hottest Diablo sauce on every item that they eat at the 9 of the 10 Taco Bell. So you got to do the spice factor. Or there's also the Baja Blast Challenge, which includes consuming 2 liters of the famed soda drink over the course of your ultramarathon. And if you puke, you're out.
Dude, I think that might be the harder one.
Absolutely.
Drinking that much sugary Baja Blast.
Let me let you. I'm not going to do this ultramarathon anyways. We're stopping at least at the Taco Bell. We're not doing Diablo Challenge or Baja Blast Challenge. That's
you
not
have
happening.
To run, right?
You got to run 31 miles.
Have you ever drank a soda and then tried to run
it's
with
terrible.
That in your belly? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Carbonated beverages and running do not mix.
It's full of sugar. Like, it's not diet Baja Blast. Like,
even drinking like Gatorade. Like, Gatorade is just pure.
Yeah.
It's just Kool-Aid.
If you drink a
bunch of Gatorade, you slam a whole Gatorade and then have to go do something, you will throw up.
Yeah.
You will yak.
Yep.
Yeah, unless you're dehydrated, yeah.
Now, here's a story. This from the text line says, there was a man from Italy who was doing an ultramarathon through the desert in Morocco and got separated from the crowd in a sandstorm, got completely lost, and had to survive by drinking the blood of bats.
And yet he did.
And yet he, I think,
wow.
I mean, I might have just given up sans bats. I don't know. Like, I guess you do what you got to do, but isn't that how our pandemic started?
Well, I mean, it's one of those things. I'm always fascinated by those survival stories. And there, it almost always comes down to the person that wants to live.
Yep. Yep.
Like the idea of most people in those situations give up and they just lay down. And every one of those stories where someone makes some sort of, you know, that NFL, was it Rob Conrad or whatever, that had to swim 7 miles or there was any of those stories or this guy, it's always like just the refusal to lay down and die.
I read a book a long time ago. It was an autobiography of, do you remember Scott O'Grady? He was an American pilot who got shot down over Serbia or something like that. And it was what the movie Behind Enemy Lines with Owen Wilson was based off of.
Yeah.
And basically have it like, they're like, we can't say that we were intentionally in that airspace or it's like an international thing. So like, you basically got to figure out how you're going to live and get your way to like a safe point. And he just had to figure it out. And in the book, they strung up all these different examples throughout history of people who were in circumstances that could have been dire, and basically how they reacted based on their will to live dictated whether or not they did. There were people in far harder circumstances that did survive because they just refused to give in, and others who were actually pretty reasonably survivable situations that are just like, nah, I'm done here.
Yeah.
And then they called it, and they probably didn't have to.
Yeah, there's all kinds of those stories. There was one, a boat in South Florida capsized, and it had a couple NFL, by the way, one of them was an NFL player that I played with. I think his name was Ellis Wims. I played with him on the Buccaneers. It was like 2 NFL players, 2 college football players, and like one that didn't. He was just one of their high school friends.
Uh-huh.
Boat capsized. And the one that ended up surviving was the one that held onto the engine. And he told the story that the others kind of went cuckoo and started like, you know, because they were in the water for like something like 30 hours.
Yeah, you start like hallucinating.
Yeah, you started like hallucinating and stuff. And like a couple of them tried to pull him off the boat. One of them said they saw a light down and dove into the water and swam down. And
I remember that like, now. Yeah, yeah, like it was really eerie, really scary.
Yeah, your mind, like, and they, he just said through that whole time, he said he just tried to focus on basically not going crazy. And right. he said all he did was just, he held onto the engine of a capsized boat. And yeah, a lot of it just comes down to your mental. Everyone thinks it's a physical thing, but it literally is like a mental thing of, can you control your mind to tell yourself that you're not going to lay down and die?
And scientists have said over and over again, even though like the human body dictates, you should only be able to go this amount of time or with this amount of water. Like humans have proven over and over again that the will to live can supersede that in the right circumstances. Yeah. So that is your Reaper Pepper and Taco Bell Ultra Marathon talk. Didn't get to our Choose Your Own Adventure. We can do some of that tomorrow, but we're going to wrap things up here on 105.1 The Fan next in the club. Welcome back. Wrapping things up here on The Fan. My final hosting shift on this fine show, and I just want to say one more time, I will still be here tomorrow behind the glass. Me and Suk will chop it up plenty, but I feel like I owe a huge debt of gratitude to The Fan, to The Fan's management, and specifically to you and Rob Suk. You guys have taken me under your wing from the moment I got here. You specifically have given me every opportunity to try and grow behind the microphone, and you've let me do it my way with guidance here and there, but really just allowing me to kind of figure things out. And I want you and I want the whole station to know how much I appreciate your willingness to work with me, to give me the opportunity, and to do something that I've always dreamed of. And this has been a dream come true for me, sitting behind the mic with you. There's so many people in this city and around, transplants all over the country, who have listened to this show for the better part of two decades and talk about it. It's a part of their fabric. And just for me to be able to be a small part of that has been really, really meaningful for me. I have friends who I run into, and you know, it's not texting every day, but they say they hear me talking with you or Rob about X, Y, and Z, and I've become a part of other people's lives, and there have been so many kind words from our listeners and our YouTube chatters and whatnot, and I'm just grateful for the opportunity. This is a special show. It's a special place. There's great people here, and I'm just lucky to have been a part of it.
I appreciate the kind words, man, and I'd like to think that anyone that's been a part of this, you know, we've had several producers over the 20 plus years I've been doing this, and every one of them becomes a little part of the family. But you know, that's kind of one of the things about that position. It's usually a position that hopefully leads to other things. Mm-hmm. And I told you when you first started, I will do everything I can to try to get you to where you want to go. And hopefully this is one of the places that you wanted to go, this new opportunity. And we love you. We miss you. And I think I speak for Rob too. I mean, you've been a huge part of it. And so I know tomorrow we'll get one more opportunity to work together. But yeah, I've enjoyed the time when Rob's out and we get to do this together, and I get to, I see the joy that you get hosting, and it's neat to watch someone kind of grow, and you've gotten infinitely better, and maybe somewhere down the line, you know, you get another opportunity to do this, because you're good at it, man, and we've loved having you on, and we'll see you in a different role, but at least one more time tomorrow before we send you off to the great Adam Bjornsson on the other side of town.
That's right.
Yeah, can I add too, by the way?
Absolutely.
Buck, we did the Ducks coverage together for 3 years, man. You took calls from me. I was here running the board for you. We hosted together. It was absolutely sublime from the start. And going back, man, just excited from the start about that pairing and everything that I thought we would do, we did. And I just loved doing that with you, man. I'm going to miss you. I'm going to miss you a lot.
Appreciate the kind words from you too, Schultzy. Appreciate your support. Everybody here at 1080, the great Jeff Baton Rouge, Dusty Hera, everybody else that I've worked with, all the producers, fantastic people here in this building. And I'll talk about it more tomorrow, but that's all for me behind this mic. We'll have more primetime for you 3 to 7 tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Good night.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.